Welcome to the Crimson Circle Energy Company, live from Coal Creek Canyon, Colorado. We're here today for our annual shareholders meeting. Good to see everybody. It looks like we have about 15 people, mostly shareholders, with us in Coal Creek today. I'd like to welcome everybody who's come from afar to be here, also from close by. It's a nice cozy group. It kind of has the energy of one of the monthly meetings, just not quite as big, and no channel today. I'd also like to welcome in everybody who's tuning in online, all of the shareholders from different parts of the world whose energy makes up this incredible company that's, I feel, is truly inspiring consciousness around the world through things like Chambre Institute, through the schools like Dreamwalker Birth and Death, things like Aspectology, and some of the other schools that we have, through the 100,000 or more people who call themselves Chambre, who tune in to the webcasts, who read the materials, and who are inspired in their lives to do what Tobias asks us to do, to enjoy life, to remember that we're here for a reason. It's not just it's not a punishment. It wasn't an accident. We actually chose to be here on Earth. Even though right now we're going to be talking about some of the corporate activities, I would like everybody to keep in mind what we're really here for. The business of Crimson Circle, or what we know as the Crimson Circle Energy Company, is here to support the work of all of us. Whether you're involved in the actual business or not, we're all part of a global family of new energy teachers. The business part basically handles the finances, the operations, and the activities of the company. It's there to support each and every one of us in the work that we do. The company, even the finances, doesn't come first. What comes first is what's in our hearts, the work that we're doing, the inspiring we do with ourselves, with our families and friends, and people all around the world. It's been an incredible 10-year journey with Tobias. And as I'm sure everybody knows, Tobias is going to be doing his final channel in about 9 days from now. It's not really so much that Tobias is leaving and handing things over to Adamus, but it's that Tobias is coming back. He's joining us back here on Earth and asking us to take responsibility for our own actions, for the work that we do. He's passing the baton to each and every one of us and saying, now is the time. Let's not hide behind our humanness. Let's not hide behind channeling. Let's not just think about this work anymore. Let's actually be the standards of it. Let's get out there and do it. It's not something that's evangelical. It's not like we're trying to recruit members. Not like we're trying to get everybody to wear the same uniform or the same beard. We're doing it in our own very beautiful and individual ways. But as each and everybody knows, it's very easy to kind of hide ourselves, to stay in our safe space, but not expand that safe space, to think about teaching, but not to do it, to do things like meet in small groups for discussion, but not really open it up. And I think what Tobias is really challenging us to do right now is saying, it's time to write the books, to do the workshops, to talk to people openly, not being afraid anymore to talk about our own spirituality. You know, I actually think people want to hear about it. I think we have an old overlay that makes us a little nervous about telling people that we talk to dead people. We talk to old Jews who haven't been on Earth for 2,000 years or Frenchmen who haven't been here in a couple hundred years. And I think we have our own reluctance. But you know, as Linda, Jan, myself, board of directors in Chambre and other places around the world are finding out is that when you express it from your heart, not didactically or not theoretically, but when you just share people from your hearts what you're experiencing, the response is phenomenal. I think some of the recent polls shows that over 65% of people around the world believe in angels or in some sort of afterlife. I think people want to know right now there's a new spirituality on Earth. that transcends the old religions, that goes beyond rules. There's a new spirit on earth. They want to see it in each and every one of us. And they're going to test us at first because they've had experiences with other groups or with religions that profess a lot but actually don't live it, don't teach it. So yes, they are going to prod us and poke us and ask some questions, and they're probably going to snicker now and then and make a few jokes behind our backs because they want to see what we're made out of. They want to see what our true grit is. Do we really believe it? Are we really living it, or are we just talking about it? So as we open up this 2009 annual shareholders meeting, let's just all take a moment as we bring Norma up for a little breathing. Let's take a moment to look at our own individual lives, our work that we're doing in spirituality. Whether you're closely connected with Crimson Circle or not, you're doing spiritual work. Let's take a moment to reflect on that, why you came here to do it, and what your next step is. And I'm sure every one of you who is here, who is listening in online, has had that feeling lately. There's something impending. There is something about to shift and to happen in your personal life. You're almost like getting a calling to say, what are you going to do, David? Steve, Marilyn? What are you going to do in your life, Garrett, to bring it to another level? And I'm not singling anybody out here because the three of us, Norma, we're all getting it as well. So as we open up this shareholders meeting with a little breathing, let's take a moment to reflect on what that next step is. Take it away, Norma.
I invite you now, as you sink into the core of you, your deep breath is this signal. It's an answering of yes. Yes, whatever this new adventure, this new, breathe it in. Breathe so deeply down into the core of you, receiving in every moment. Breath at a time, so sweetly, so compassionately, just for you. The offering comes, and in this moment, as you breathe deeply, that signal is such a sweet, sweet yes. Oh yes, willing to be this human of new energy, this new me. Breathe so deeply. Every breath signals yes. Yes, my heart is open. My love is open to give and receive. Breathe deeply now. Deeply now, strengthening CCEC and all of the miracle that it offers. Breathe deeply. Yes. Yes, breath at a time. Each of us lending our love, our energy, our strength. Breathe deeply. Yes, for you.
Thank you, Norma. I'd like to officially call this meeting of the Crimson Circle Energy Company, Inc. to order. It looks like it's about 11:19 on Friday, July 10th, 2009. Yeah, the audience is signaling me from 7 to 12. Nobody really knows, but we'll clarify that later. I think it is the 10th. And as we call the meeting to order, Linda, Jan are joining up here on stage, as it were. Anything you'd like to say as we open up the meeting?
I think you said about as much as anyone could want to hear or say.
Thank you. And Jan?
Yeah, it was a different opening than other times. So, yeah.
Not planned at all, actually.
I know.
This morning was very, very busy, and I didn't have time to think about it. But it just felt right, I think, with everybody tuning in. It's the energy that we're all really going through right now. Well, let's get down to business, and this is the business portion. And as I mentioned before, let's not forget about the spirit and the heart of what we all do. But the business is important in this world of duality to make sure we balance the books and make sure we keep all the records straight and everything else. So the first item of business is to ask the Secretary of the Corporation, the lovely Linda Benio, for the proof of notice of this meeting. Has the notice gone out to all the shareholders according to the bylaws of the corporation?
The notice did go out to all the shareholders, and we do have a quorum of their votes as well.
Great. So for the determination of quorum, do we have an overall percentage or for the actual votes and ballots that were cast?
Yes, we do. 84% of all shareholders
Voted. An astounding 84%. I think that's a record for the last couple of years. But actually, we do appreciate everybody's vote. If nothing else, it gives it's a legal vote, but also it gives a strong indication of the kind of the pulse of the shareholders.
And we do have the actual printouts of all the votes and any information needed regarding that.
Okay. So what we're going to do now is just go through the actual items that were voted on. I'll mention the item, and then Linda and or Jan are going to give us the actual numbers.
Jan is going to do that. He has it all tabulated in one place. So.
Okay. So the first item on the ballots, of course, was the approval of the stockholder meeting minutes. The approval of the minutes from our last shareholders meeting.
Annual meeting.
Which was June 27th, 2008.
That's actually our annual meeting.
Yes.
Because you could have more than an annual meeting, but that's the annual meeting.
So everybody was sent a copy of the minutes. It's pretty standard stuff. And according to the final tabulation, Jan, could you read off the actual votes?
Yep. 90% approved the minutes. Against were 4%, and 6% abstained.
Okay. And also, I know Jan has sent out an email. To anybody who abstained or didn't vote for the minutes, it's kind of ordinary, but we would like to know if there was any issues or concerns with the minutes, because it's pretty straightforward. It's taking a vote, recording the vote, and that's it. So I guess we were a little concerned if somebody doesn't agree with the minutes, we want to know what it is you didn't agree with.
Because the minutes are just meant to be a record of history.
Exactly. Okay. Great. Thank you, Jan. The next item on the votes was the approval of the 2008 balance sheet and income statement. This was basically the financial statement prepared by our accounting firm, Mueller and Company. And it was actually, Jan, help me with the terms here, but it was, what did they actually call it?
A compilation of the financial records.
So it meant that they went through all the financial records actually in great detail. What would be the difference between a compilation and a full review?
The difference is that the level of checking and double checking is in more detail when you do a review or a full audit.
Okay.
As I explained in my letter to the shareholders, the compilation that was done did involve a certain review, but the nature of that review is less detailed than if you would do a full audit, for instance.
But they did go through all of the financials, all the little details. So anyway, so we put that we sent that out to everybody for your review, and the vote on that was?
The vote was 78% voted for approving the 2008 financials. 8% of the shareholders voted against, and 14% abstained.
Okay, and once again, if there are any questions that any of the shareholders have about the financials, and what we'll do, David, we'll wait to the end to come back to Q&A so we can put all the shareholders who are listening online on the conference bridge, and then we'll go into that. But I do want to emphasize that if you have any questions about it, you know, kind of the financials, it is what it is. It's prepared by an outside firm, so... You know, it's the numbers. Okay, so that motion passed. The next motion was to discharge the Board of Directors for the period of January 1, 2008 through July 10th, 2009. And the vote was?
72% was in favor of approving the discharge. Against was 6%, and 22% abstained.
Okay. So that motion carried for the discharge of the Board of Directors. And again, if there's any questions, I know some people abstained because they really didn't understand what that means. At any time, do feel free to write in or call in and ask us if you have any questions. Okay, the next item was voting for the election of the Board of Directors serving as of July 10th, 2009, going through our next annual shareholders meeting. The nominations for the Board of Directors included Linda Benio, Alain Boulay, Norma Delaney, my brain's not quite working today, Gerard Anofsky, Dr. Doug Davies, and
John
Kaderka, and myself, Jeffrey Hoppe. We did ask for nominations outside of those that slate that was that came from the former Board of Directors. We did not receive any other nominations. And just a word to all the shareholders is that you can do nominations. There's some articles in the bylaws. I think we distributed to everybody. But you're absolutely welcome to make nominations. So think about this for the next year going forward. And I think on this, Jan, do you want to read off the individual?
I have the individual percentages. Yep.
Okay.
For Garrett, 88% was in favor, against 8%, and abstained 4%. For Linda, 90% was in favor, 8% against, and 2% abstained. For Alain, 76% was in favor, 6% against, and 18% abstained. For Doug Davies, 72% was in favor, against was 14%, and 40% abstained. For Norma, 86% was in favor, against 10%, and 4% abstained. For Jeff, 90% was in favor, 8% against, and 2% abstained. For John, 88% in favor, 6% against, and 6% abstained.
Okay, thanks, John. So the Board of Directors has been approved going forward. As a matter of fact, we're going to have a board meeting directly after the shareholders meeting. So that motion carried also. And finally, the last item on the list was the granting of preferred stock to Linda and myself. There was an explanation of this in the letter that went out, but it's basically non-dividend paying stock. It's in a different category than common, and the vote totals on that are?
In favor, 60%, against 34%, and 6% abstained.
So that motion carried also. So those were the items for the ballots, and it looked like everything carried very well. We thank everybody for voting, and again, if you do have any questions today or going forward, make sure to ask us. Those are the old business items, and I'm just trying to get my brain straight here. I think right now we can move into, unless there's anything else from the Secretary of the Corporation, we can move into the questions from the shareholders.
No. Item 10.
Old business?
Oh, you have a different agenda.
No agenda. Oh, yes. Yeah, actually, I had that over here kind of listed down there. Yeah, let's talk for a minute about the shareholder benefit program. And Linda and Jan, please feel free to join in on this. This was something that was developed about a year ago, basically saying the company hasn't been in the position to pay dividends or anything like that. So what can we do to basically thank the shareholders and give them some return?
There's a lot of really difficult to listen to feedback when you're talking right now. Do you know what that is, John?
Oh, is it bothering you?
Yeah, it's bothering me.
We can point the speaker away a little bit. That'll probably help. You must be getting it over there worse than...
You can't hear it? I only hear it when you talk.
Oh, really? Maybe want to get too close like that. So the shareholder benefit program is designed for the shareholder to give them extra value in for your investment. Last year, we started the program, and basically what we did is said the shareholders can attend two workshops free of charge. And it actually worked pretty well. We put some limitations on it. That's actually worse, John. We put some limitations on it in terms of we didn't want 30 shareholders showing up for a single workshop and, you know, making it basically unprofitable for the company. But all in all, it worked pretty well. I think the toughest thing about it was for the U.S.-based shareholders, you realized we don't do a lot of U.S.-based workshops. We do a lot of things in Europe and Australia and other places, but it was a little difficult for a lot of you to attend. The things we did do here were already booked in terms of the limits that we put on the number of shareholders attending. So we revised that going forward, and it will start on September 1st. The shareholder benefit program will be, I wish I had a drum roll here. Shareholder benefit program will be either gift certificates or coupons. We're still working out some technical logistics.
Whether it's a coupon or a certificate is just, that's immaterial.
Yeah, but it's $1,000 worth of Crimson Circle for the year.
Credit.
You can use it to buy new products, to go to workshops, just about anything. The only thing we're doing is limiting on a few of what we call our very high-end or our special events, like the Egypt tour for 2010 was just announced. Our margins on that are pretty tight. We need to fill every seat as profitably as we can. So we're putting some limitations on those things where we're contracting out to somebody for a lot of the services.
There are a few things, and we'll get the details of the program later.
Yeah. We're going to send out a mailer here in the next, let's say, 3 weeks that will explain it. But it's basically if you want to order one of our new products... And I'm pleased to present these today. These actually just were announced yesterday, not even available for sale until last night. But this is the new Kathumi What's Missing personal study course. This was from the workshop that we did in Columbus, Ohio in March 2008. And is that better?
Here, I'll hold it.
No, John wants it over here. There you go. We've been sitting on it for a while, and Jan and Linda keep saying, let's get it out there. Let's put it in the study course. So it is now. The other thing that we're really, really proud of is the new Journey of the Angels personal study course.
It is really the whole story that Tobias has based everything on.
This was actually filmed in Breckenridge 2 weeks ago, I believe.
Was it 2 weeks ago?
I think it was just 2 weeks ago.
Three.
Or 3 weeks ago. The staff went like crazy putting everything together, putting the packaging together. We just received the shipment on it a day or two ago. It's absolutely amazing. It's actually School 1, The Wall of Fire, School 2, Coming to Earth, and School 3, The Joy of Life, all in a 11-CD set with a personal study course.
So the timing on it is so befitting with Tobias leaving and knowing that all this material is based on the story.
So things like that, if you want to purchase those items or the
Journey
digital downloads.
Journey of the Angels is epic. It's epic.
It's epic. It's, you know, we all gathered in Breckenridge to film this, and I think we kind of thought that we've gone through these schools before. It's just going to be getting it on film. So I don't think we were particularly...
I was not prepared.
I wasn't excited, but we just were like, okay, we'll do it again. And it was, for those who were there, it was amazing.
Yep. So are those CDs or DVDs?
Those are CDs. The DVDs, the actual filming, will be used by the certified Chamber Institute teachers to do a, whether it's a weekend class or maybe...
You can't
Saturdays.
Do that in a weekend.
Probably not.
Oh, my God.
Well, in a way, it's a little bit like Course in Miracles where it has to be, I think it has to be taught over a period of time, but it's stunning. It's as Linda said, it's epic.
You can't listen to it without dreaming about it.
Yeah. So we will send out a notice about the shareholders benefit program. It's basically $1,000 worth of store credits to use however you want, with a few limitations on it. But we'll send that out. So we're happy to announce that.
And any limitation is based on just that you can't you don't want to hinder the business with it. You want people, want the shareholders to have the benefit of it, but we want it also to not.
Right. Certain things like the Wisconsin retreat coming up, for instance, we wanted to limit that. I think there's 10 shareholders attending, but we're limiting the group size to 60, so you don't want to, we still have to make money, right?
Good. We still have to have the Especially. Event be, you have to have it be successful.
Yeah. Okay, Jan, Linda, anything else before we move into shareholder questions? Okay, give me just a moment, and here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to connect onto our conference bridge, and once I make that connection, then I'll give the shareholders the number, although you should already have it, then you connect into that conference bridge as well. So give me just a moment to do that. In the meantime, maybe Garrett can lead us in singing.
Jeff?
Yes?
Turn your music off or whatever you're playing.
Oh, okay.
See, it was your fault all along.
I have figured that. Dang. Okay. By the way, a great way to make calls like this is through Skype.
Yes.
Okay. Bacon and
Welcome
egg.
To live office conferencing. Please enter your six.
The conference is not starting.
I know.
If you are the moderator, please enter your. Moderator has joined the conference.
That was pretty slick, huh? Okay, now for all the shareholders, you can call in. The number is 1-800-391-1709. I'm going to repeat that. 1-800-391-1709. And once you make the connection, you're going to have to punch in this code 516-105. So let me read that again. 1-800-391-1709. And then punch in the code 516-105.
And I believe they were all emailed that information.
Yeah, everybody,
as well.
You had it on your all the information that we sent out
the
for
notices.
The meeting. And we're going to wait just a minute to let everybody punch in. And by the way, I'll have to let you know, when you dial in, you will be live into this conference call. So wait for us to call on you. But if you're talking to somebody else or you're mumbling, we can hear you. We can hear you.
Did you want to start with a question inside?
Yeah, let's start with a question from the audience. Linda has the microphone, and she's going to bring it to David. I believe you had a question.
Go, David.
This is a question that pertains to our balance sheet. And actually, I have a number of questions about our balance sheet. But to start off...
And if I could make one interruption, yes. I am going to ask initially to keep it to one or two questions. We'll go about 30 minutes, but I want everybody... I know some of you, I see these long lists, and either the meeting's going to last really, really long, or we're going to have to cut it off. So if you can kind of summarize it, if at
Let's
all
see
possible.
See what we can do.
Yeah.
Go Let's ahead. Celebrate.
I need to summarize.
And actually, I'm going to ask two questions.
Okay.
One is actually probably the most fundamental, important question is going forward is safeguarding the information that's been developed so far today to keep that in trust so that it is absolutely safe and bulletproof and everything else. And of course, I know that's part of the reason that we approve the preferred shares. but also there are other steps that are involved, and also it may not even be a question to answer now at this time, but it may be a question to, for the board of directors to further discuss today.
Right.
But that is, I think, a fundamental question that I have.
Explain, what do you mean by safeguarding, David?
Yes. As an example, in my opinion, what we have is actually the most precious and valuable information in all of creation. And we don't want anybody or any government or whatever to tie it up and make it not available.
Absolutely.
You know, be it a cyber attack from Korea or a legal action from somebody who had a bad experience at a workshop or religious groups or whatever. And in this transition that we're going through, those duality issues will come up. Mm-hmm. And in one hand, I know we create a safe space. At the same time, there's also 3D steps that are probably practical to take.
Mm-hmm. David, so, that's an excellent question. And I've got an answer, but I don't want to...
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
You know, you're the chairman. We're looking
well,
for you.
David, that's a really good question, and we spent a lot of time thinking about it. And there's some basically very human, potentially real situations. One would be what happened if Linda and I decided that we were going to ascend tomorrow, pop out of our physical body or weren't available. The second question is, as you brought up a very good point, what if there was a lawsuit that threatened the intellectual property of the company, which is what you're talking about, the content? The way it's structured right now is that Linda and I own the intellectual property. It was never basically what you legally turned over to Crimson Circle Energy Company for that very reason. What we do is have an exclusive relationship with Crimson Circle Energy Company to use that material. That is being formalized either at this board, well, not at this board meeting, but we're going to discuss it at this board meeting, the final contract or agreement between CCIP, which is Linda's and my company, and Crimson Circle. And it was done so that if there ever was a corporate takeover or a lawsuit or anything else, that the intellectual property stayed separate. And that was on the advice of our many attorneys that we had back when. So now here Linda and I basically own the material. We're licensing it to Crimson Circle. So it still leads to the question, what happens if something happened to Linda and I? Our next step is to put that into a trust. And the trust goes back to basically Crimson Circle or a board of trustees that will continue the licensing relationship with Crimson Circle, but always maintaining a bit of legal separation between that. If Linda and I decided not to do this work anymore or whatever reason we couldn't, that it could go on, that our nearly 300 teachers around the world could continue teaching and that the library of information was still available to people. So that is a very good question. So it's a combination of a separate company that holds the intellectual property, and as soon as we finalize the written agreement with CCEC, Linda and I will create a trust. So if something happens to us, it doesn't go to our families or get tied up in probate or anything. It's actually within a trust. Excellent question.
And a complicated one. There's just a lot of different factors that come into play.
Right.
So, yeah, it is, but it is a paramount issue.
Yeah, and it's not really unusual for a corporation at many times to hold the intellectual property right. separate just for a little bit of protection.
Absolutely, and totally yeah. concur and agree. And so another question I have is actually one about the CCEC European segment information on our balance sheet. And of course, their numbers are laid out there. But what I'd like, you know, from the three of you is actually some dialogue as far as what the numbers mean, what happened, where we're going, not only for CCEC Europe, but also taking into effect that before long, you know, we're going to be in Asia, Africa, South America, and have those similar issues and to look at and work through. And how can we do that effectively? So we don't crash and burn.
It's another good question. Jan is probably the most familiar with the CCEC Europe, and it's a question, by the way, that's on the table for the board to discuss how we're going to do that going forward. But Jan, any words of wisdom?
Words of wisdom. Very quickly, the reason that CCEC Europe was established was for several reasons. First, it was to provide a better customer service to European customers that were ordering physical products. Things that were shipped from the United States typically had to go through customs and ended up with delays, extra charges, and things like that. So that was one reason to establish a company within Europe to take advantage of the internal European market without customs, etc. The second reason was that we wanted to provide the teachers in Europe with the opportunity to list their classes in euros rather than in dollars. They had had in the past some big swings in the euro-dollar exchange rate and thereby also big differences in the income from their classes. When we established the company, we started to operate, outsource the physical product handling and the production, a little bit similar to what we have done in the United States. And the shop opened effectively in February. And what we observed in the past 6-9 months is actually that our customers are ordering less and less physical products to a degree that it has now come as a question whether it really justifies a separate structure with separate accounting, with separate operations and everything, because people are more and more ordering online, downloads and stuff like that. With the teachers, one of the things that we bumped into is that a number of teachers do the Chambre Institute classes as part of their business, a practice or whatever, and some don't. And in Europe, you have quite strict regulations when it comes to VAT, value-added tax, that made it a little bit more complex than we had anticipated to list those classes in our European store as well. So to make a long story short, some of the most basic reasons to start a European operation have now been put to question, and now the board has to look at the situation again and decide on whether they want to continue or not.
And David, if I could add a word to that. As Jan mentioned, when we started the European operations, it was a matter of things like the exchange rates or currencies and physical product, but it really in a year and a half, we found out that about, I think it's about 75 to 80% of all of our product sales come through digital downloads. There are some people that still want the physical product, but really more of them just want to download it immediately. And we've also found that the initial issue of, credit cards are used in North America extensively, but in Europe and Asia, they're not so common. But PayPal is becoming a more accepted way of doing things.
Really moved up. And PayPal has really, really been improved a lot recently.
And I think there was some issues with PayPal a couple of years ago about
pre-eBay.
Yeah, but they've tightened it up. So a lot of people now, let's say in Europe, will use PayPal as a debit out of their bank account. And, of course, we get the credit into our account. So it bypasses the credit cards, and it resolves a lot of issues. So we're finding less and less need to have individual operations in other countries in the world.
And specifically, we show that product sales were $36,000 roughly dollars, and yet we show a net loss of $44,000.
I'm not sure. Yeah. Product sales for...
I can answer that, David. It was an allocation of costs. My management fee, which was paid totally by the U.S. company in the past. We had a discussion about it, and we said, okay, let's split it between the European operation and the American operation because I was managing most of the European operations by myself. So it was just a matter of allocating the management fee that in total remained the same. But one portion was paid by the U.S. company and one portion was paid by the European company. Now, you can argue about the level of those management fees, but the way we had originally designed it, it's resulted in a loss after cost of sales and some other costs like the outsourcing contracts that we have with the companies that service all the physical handling.
And so I think, you know, the European thing would definitely be an issue for the board of directors to totally identify, because not only, again, does it apply to Europe, but then going forward to other continents and our whole business model for going forward.
And David, I'll share my personal feelings, not those of the board, but necessarily. But what we learned in the European experience is it's a lot more work than the benefit out of it. I'd like to become a little bit more focused and efficient. The finances are becoming more and more global anyway, so I'd like to actually consolidate it at this point.
And I'll pass the microphone.
It's great talking with you. Let's take a call from the callers, the shareholders who are listening in.
Thank you.
And then we'll come back and take another one from the studio audience. So if there's any shareholder listening in online right now that has a question, please speak up and identify yourself by name, please. If you have a question.
Yes. This is Eva Vandenbroek.
Yes, in Belgium. How are you doing, Eva?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Good.
I would like to ask a double question related to the concern that the company may not be an ongoing concern, so the issue about the viability of the company. So first, I would like to hear some perspectives in that light for the year 2009. And
sure.
Also,
let's do that question first, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. The what Eva's asking is in the letter from the accounting firm Mueller and Company, there's a last paragraph that said the company needs to look at its viability as an ongoing concern. They were basing this on the 2008 financial report and a quick look at the first half of 2009. A couple of things. If you look at it, we had substantial losses in 2007 and 2008 and losses that we can't keep incurring. Basically, if you want to get right down to it, the company has used or gone through its cash. Right now we're working on
unearned revenue.
In other words, for workshops that we're doing in September and October, that's the money that we're working off today. So it is a situation that obviously the management and the board is very aware of, and we've been working very, very hard to turn that around. And I'm going to interject a little bit here, saying that we had tremendous legal and consulting expenses in the last, year and a half, 2 years, that we're not incurring anymore. We had a huge corporate cleanup job that Jan Brouwer managed, and we're going to formally thank you later, but I'll informally say Jan did a tremendous job of really cleaning up a lot of problems that the company had, everything from the stock program, the founder's stock, the company's spending levels and everything else, and it's taken a good 2 years to bring that back around. The good news is that in the first 6 months, I don't actually have I don't have the official numbers in yet, but we'll have them shortly. We're at about a break even, which is good news. We've controlled expenses. I'm going to keep this real basic because I don't like too much accounting stuff. It hurts my brain. You get two things, revenues, and our revenues are pretty good. We're $2
million. Consistent.
They're very consistent. We're a $2 million company. There's not many what I would call metaphysical companies, groups of light workers, channeling companies that are $2 million companies. Most of them are $100,000, $200,000 kind of homegrown firms. So we have something to be proud of. we have to watch the expenses. We've had tremendous expenses. We had our Tahoe office. That office was very, very costly in terms of staffing, our lease, everything else associated with it. It was very, very expensive. Jan, working with the staff and working with some consultants, we've turned that around. We actually in June made our last payment. We negotiated a buyout of our lease. That's $5,000 a month hard, and by the time you add in the overhead factors, it was about, I'm going to say, roughly $7,500 a month just for that office. There's expenses, reductions that we haven't even seen yet on the balance sheet. For instance, Jan is leaving at the end of this month. And I'm sorry to say,
what a sacrifice!
It's a cost saving.
The big saving.
We've gone through other things in the company where we've identified another $50,000 worth of annual savings that I feel really good that by the end of the year, particularly with new products coming out, that we're going to be at break even or better. So, Eva, you ask a very, very good question, and the accountants had to put it in there. Accountants have to go by certain
guidelines,
and they had to say, if you keep going the way you're going now, basically at the end of 2008 with the expense levels, you're going to go out of business, and they're absolutely right. Fortunately, we didn't wait for their report to do something about it. We've been doing it really very aggressively for the last couple of years. So I'm excited about the first six-month report that will probably come out in, I don't know, Mary Alice, Jan, you think that'll be ready by the end of July?
No. August.
Early August.
Somewhere in August. You know.
Somewhere in August. Yeah. I think we're going to see a clear change in directions for the company. We don't have a choice. One of the things we're
Thank
doing...
Thank
And one more point on that, Eva, is one more thing we're doing. Linda and I are foregoing about $25,000 in compensation between July 1st and the end of the year. We're taking that as a subordinated note, which means it's a loan to the company because we need to improve our cash position. So Linda and I said, what else do we do? Well, we don't pay ourselves. So all those
well, we
things.
We reduced our payment to ourselves.
Well, we reduce our payment and put it as a subordinated note. Eva, you had another question?
That was related to the annual licensing fee, but maybe it is just what you are mentioning. I was wondering if in the circumstances you were considering to reduce the amount of the annual licensing fee paid to Sundance.
Yeah, and the question was, Linda and I are compensated in a licensing fee to... from our group, from our private company, Sundance, and in a management fee. We're not changing our licensing fee. That represents half of our compensation because it's a licensing fee and we don't want to, there's some legal implications. We are reducing our management fee, and that's the $25,000 in savings between now and the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Eva, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll come back here to Coal Creek Canyon, Colorado, for the next question.
Mr. Beamer?
Tom, from Pennsylvania. Did you guys drive out or fly?
We drove.
Beautiful drive, isn't it?
Oh, it's a wonderful drive, but we had two very long days.
Oh, yeah. You should have taken three shorter days. Yeah, and you're staying up here in... Yeah, yeah. Good. Okay, go ahead, Tom.
My question is, since Jan is leaving, I'm curious as to what's next for him. Obviously, we're going to miss him and his efforts.
Yeah. And so everybody could hear the question, Jan is leaving. Jan, what are you going to do?
Nothing. Enjoy life.
Whatever he chooses.
No, that's the question that people have been asking me for the past 5 months since I mentioned that I would leave. On August 1st. And I'm writing some books, little booklets. So that will be one of my little projects. But other than that, I have nothing planned. First, enjoy my life after 2 years of pretty hard work, actually.
Pretty hard work. I don't think Jan had any
idea.
Knew
what he was getting into.
When Linda and I called him from Finland and said, "Hey, Jan, what are you doing?" And and I'm going to take this opportunity to for Linda and I to personally thank Jan. He came into the company at a very, I think the word is tumultuous time.
I was trying to come up with that word.
Wasn't it?
Yeah,
it's a good word.
Tumultuous. Yeah, that's exactly the right word.
You know, and on top of that was compounded by the fact that Linda and I were traveling like crazy, and it was very difficult for us to put our arms around the day-to-day operations of the company. Jan came in and hit the ground running, went in and took a look at the financial position of the company, really took a look at the reports, or actually the lack of reports that we didn't have, took an assessment, hired some very, very good consultants at a very affordable price, and guided us through, I would say, the stormiest waters that I've ever gone through in business. And I've gone through some tough ones. The last company I was with, we fought the top 10 phone companies in America, and I thought that was tough. But this was tougher because it was more personal.
Brought our team together in an amazing way.
You know, Jan brought systems into the company in terms of things like our production of our CDs and our media, streamlined that process. I can remember there were times, you guys probably remember two out in Tahoe, where Siglinda was just burning away, and Jan came in and said, that doesn't make sense anymore. Streamlined the finance and accounting, the reporting procedures. Jan has got it so succinct with even Linda and I doing projections 12 months out. And by the way, I want to congratulate Linda because our projections for workshop attendance are within, I think, about 5%, if I'm not mistaken, which is, you know, how
on
do
the
you...
On the positive.
On the positive, yeah, by the way. Yeah. You know, Linda is really good at just knowing where those numbers are. So Jan has come up with incredible systems that the company is running on right now. So as he leaves and turns so much of that over to Mary Alice in the back of the room. Mary Alice has been with us now 3 whole weeks or 4 weeks?
Yeah,
4 weeks.
And she's still here.
Yes. We have good banking systems. I actually have to, if I don't mind schmoozing on you a little bit, we have systems that, you know, $5 and $10 million companies don't have. Jan's brought them into our company of about $2 million. And they're really, really tight. There's not...
He's done a really good job.
Yeah. So I take this moment to
thank you,
Jan, and applause for that.
Thank you.
And as Jan has constantly pointed out to the board and to management, we need to always watch our expense levels. You know, as anybody who's been in business knows, those they creep up on you, and you have to keep assessing them, watching them, and keeping them within line with the revenues.
I think that's definitely important going forward.
Yeah.
But I think it's also important that we, and it is a beautiful moment right now, and you didn't prepare the opening like we discussed yesterday night. So I think this company is also on the a point of separation where it leaves a tumultuous time behind it. Mm. And, you know, part of it, of course, is good systems, in our case, cash flow forecast. What can we expect? Is there anything that we need to change or adjust? Absolutely, financial management, even for a spiritual company, or especially for a spiritual company, is very, very important. But besides that, I think it's also very important that we, and you ongoing, and as a shareholder, I'm very interested to see that ongoing, that the focus remains on the core of what this company and everybody that is involved is all about, and that's the inspiring of consciousness, whether it's through workshops, events, teacher classes, products, because there's one thing to just trying to balance the books every year and to say, okay, we lost a little bit or we gained a little bit, but it's so much about really bringing this to a level where people will feel inspired. And although that not always translates in money, it does translate in a positive energy. And We had even discussions about changing the structure that Crimson Circle Energy Company is working in, because I wanted to make clear to everybody, whether they're in the management or in the board, is that structure is just a choice. And like with GM, you can leave an old structure, create a new structure, and do some funny things in between, and all of a sudden your books look great. So from systems, books, finance point of view, you can do many, many things to create a better position or, you know, make it more beautiful. But what you cannot change is the underlying energy of what we are all doing. And I think that is important. We have all been unfortunately distracted in the past 2-3 years by a lot of things. And I really feel that, as I wrote to you in my personal letter, is that we have come to a point where there is much more balance and much more momentum to move to the next level, where there is no distraction on corporate and other matters, but really about the core of what this company is all about. And I wish all of us a lot of fun while doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jan.
So thank you for
appreciate
your question.
That. Thank you. Let's go back to another caller online. I feel like we're doing a Dr. Ruth show or something. if there's somebody listening in online, if you'd like to ask a question, make sure to announce who you are and
we
where
have
you're
one
from.
Person who is on the conference bridge.
Okay. No questions from the conference bridge? Okay. Another question from the audience right here in Coal Creek. Carrie?
I guess I'm curious why all your employees aren't involved and get to hear this back, you know, this information. Would it be customary to allow them to understand, you know, where you're going from and where you're going to and what the plans are for the future?
Our employees right now, or the staff, is so busy working day and night. They were actually invited to attend. But they are back burning CDs, preparing kits for the midsummer. Every one of them. And, of course, John is here, and Michelle is working away on store items. Actually, it's a credit to them because they were asked to be here, but they're working.
Okay.
And they're going to be working tonight and tomorrow. As you know, the midsummer conference starts next week, and it's the level of detail is incredible.
And Mary Alice is here.
That's right. Mary Alice is here, representing the staff. But that brings up a good point, Carrie. We have regular staff meetings. There's a meeting every Tuesday morning on the phone, and then now we're trying to do more in-person meetings at our house every couple of weeks. And we do talk with the staff about the financial condition of the company, about the issues. It's very, very open. It's not held back.
With the shareholder benefit, I know for U.S. shareholders that I've talked to, it would be great if we... Is it possible to use that $1,000 to take other teacher courses and not just your workshops?
That's a good question, and probably not, or we'll have to work out some sort of thing. The teachers are independent contractors, and... that's how they make their money. So if a shareholder showed up for free, it would be depriving them. So you have to look at it like it's their business, not our business. So that would be a tough one.
What about using our benefit to pay your portion and then pay them their fee in cash?
If we can figure out a relatively easy logistic, you know, because it's
right.
All run through the store, it's all automated. And we have talked about it. We just have to figure out.
We have to look at and make sure that we can do something that's actually manageable, and that's a little bit the limitation on that, too.
Only,
it has to be manageable.
Only because most of the shareholders I know have gone to a point that there's not a lot to do besides buy product.
Right.
But I do know a few that have not, like, taken Dreamwalker Death or
right.
And want to be able to take these teacher-led courses. So I'm just planting.
It's really good input. Thank you.
That's good input. And there's another alternative for those shareholders here in the area is to, you know, if we had 2, 3, 4 shareholders that would want to take something, There's a way maybe we could compensate the teacher for that. There's some things we can do. We need to get with Mary Alice and look at the store and the logistics to see if that's possible. That one's the trickiest, though.
What about maybe a discount?
Possibly a discount that would be equal to the Crimson Circle's 30%.
Right. But again, we just have to... Again, we have a really good small staff doing all the work, and we just have to make sure that it's manageable.
Right.
I guess I'm always curious, and I'm going to ask every time, beyond Chambre Institute and your workshops, do you have any other dreams for what this company is going to become?
Yes.
Or, and
profitable.
Other,
yeah.
You know, and I guess I want to say, so I understood that you were going to give yourself preferred stock in exchange for reducing your fee.
Yes.
But now I'm hearing it's a one-time only this quarter offer, or is it a total reduction in your...
Carrie, is a subordinated note, which means it's a loan to the company, or we're foregoing that. And as it says in the paperwork, the board of directors will review that quarterly, so we'll have to have a discussion with them. Basically, simplified form, when the company is profitable, Linda and I will want to be paid our full salary. If it's not, we have to be the first to step up and say, you know, we have to forego some of what we're being paid.
So then when it's profitable, you'll make your full salary, and then you'll also start paying down that note as
Hopefully.
Well.
Absolutely.
Okay. So it's not an overall reduction that you're taking on a permanent basis?
No.
Hopefully not.
I'm not saying that.
For the same reason that you want the company to be profitable and successful.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to understand. I don't have an opinion either way. So.
Well, here's what happened. We looked at the cash between now and the end of the year, and we said we need to be cash positive. You know, we've got to bring in money. We got to watch how we spend it. What ways can we build our cash? And Linda and I said we'll forego $25,000 in compensation, and as a note to the company. So our skin is in the game, like yours is and everybody else's, and saying we are determined to make this profitable.
And not go to the bank for a loan. That was the other option, is to take. We're not going to do that. We really know that the company can be successful and profitable.
A loan is not a realistic option. Let me, if you allow me, to explain a little bit more, because it's more than the 25 which you're referring to. Right now, we're looking at cash. Creditors are paid first. Jeff and Linda are last on the paycheck, which means that right now, what they totally have in the game, your stake, is much more than any individual shareholder. I mean, we're talking about $60,000, $70,000.
That the company still hasn't paid us.
Absolutely. So when looking at the situation, we said, okay, first we need to turn the profitability around. That's where it all starts. You cannot go on and on and on and incur losses. So with the cost savings that have not been reflected yet in the first 5 months where we broke even, with the additional cost savings, which you know can get up to as high as $200,000 a year, which is a lot, that should turn the profitability around, assuming, and that's a very important assumption, that the environment where we sell our events, where teachers do their workshops, where we sell our products, is not adversely affected. You know, if we assume that we are in the same income level, then that should turn it around.
Right.
Okay. Now, in the meantime, we are facing a situation where cash is going out, cash is coming in, and that's where I discussed with Jeff and Linda, based upon the projections that we made, that we should be reducing our cash going out for the next 6 months at least. Again, we have some very large payments coming in and going out, notably the France and Egypt tour, which is, you know, you talk about hundreds and thousands of dollars coming in and going out. So we wanted to be very careful not to run a situation that we cannot pay anybody. We have an incredible payment record. We pay our creditors typically, you know, within a couple of days, not later than 30 days. So very few companies are able to do that today. And that combined, so What they have agreed to do is reduce some of the cash exposure, subordinate that formally, while they were already practically paid last in the row. That should take this company through the first 6 months of the turnarounds, which should become visible. And we go to a level of detail where we discuss events, the potential profitability of those events, new products coming out. So we have a pretty good handle on what we can expect. But then again, if you look a year from of the past year and compare it to the business situation now, lots of things have changed. And we see that also. People are signing up much, much later than they used to. Some of the events, we noticed that we're not reaching our expected number of attendees. So what you can do is be done by management. And then, of course, it's up to the board to monitor on a quarterly basis if things are moving in the right direction and discuss with Jeff and Linda if any additional thing would be necessary. But I want to avoid the impression that the stake that Jeff and Linda have in this company is relatively limited. It's quite a big stake that they have now in the success of the of this company.
And so that's where I guess I'd say, do you have any ideas on other revenue streams beyond what you have now? Are there any? Are you talking about anything or looking at any other options?
I'm going to say kind of a qualified yes. We have a really nice business model for Crimson Circle. About half of the revenues are derived from the workshops that Linda and I head. We have good revenues from the media, which is the online store. People order CDs and tapes. And
it's created from the events.
Yeah, they're created from the events, like these two new kits. I noticed this morning, I looked online and in less than, I think, 10 hours, we had sold enough of the new Journey of the Angels to pay all the production costs, which was phenomenal. And we found that a stream of new products is important. And at the same time, the old products, stuff that was done 4 or 5 years ago, is still selling. You know, one here, three there. So it's a really a nice kind of annuity. So we have that, the products, Linda's in my workshop, and then the Chambre Institute teacher thing. So it's really nice. And at this point, Carrie, I don't want to venture into anything wild and crazy. I want to take what we have and make it work even better.
I thought you were the wild and crazy guy, John.
I'd like to add to that.
You worked with me for 2 years.
I'd like to add to that. Actually, since Jeff and I have been back and looking at things, one of the things we realized is that we love what we do and we're running as fast as we could, and that essentially the one piece that we kind of had missed is that we really can do more to get the word out to more people. We're working on increasing the database. We're working on increasing links to our website. We're working on AdWords. We're getting out more interviews. So actually what we're doing is we're doing, our focus actually is more on connecting Crimson Circle to the world and to broaden the audience that way. And that seems to be a much more efficient and effective way to potentially build a company, is to by building the awareness and making more connections with people rather than trying to come up with something new. Let's just tell people what we do.
If I may add on that, Carrie, because I think it's a very important and good strategic question. And there are several ways where you can increase your business. One of them is diversification. Perhaps some of you remember that there was a plan way back to jump into real estate.
Thank God.
It didn't happen because you would not exist today. I think that many companies that go through a period like this, as Crimson Circle did, come always to a moment where is our strength? What is our core business? What is our core competence? And the core business of this company is to inspire consciousness through classes, products, and events.
Yep.
What we noticed, and that is a concern which Linda was now referring to how it's being addressed, what we noticed is that there is a limited group that attends workshops by product and attend events, teacher or Jeff and Linda. And it's not so much because the customer base, as you would call it, is just limited by a few strange people that, you know, listen to an old Jew. Because every time, and I talk from personal experience, but I know many other teachers and people that are involved have the same experience. When you talk about what we are doing, the information, it is inspiring people. Now, what we did not do well until now was to venture beyond the inner circle of Chambra. Yeah, we had our shouts, we had our events, we went to Romania for the sixth time in a row. So, you know, and that was good because it built a very solid base. I think now the time has come for this company to expand, stretch, and to reach out to a broader audience. And that will require a slightly different approach. And that's why I'm very encouraged by the fact that in the past week you did two radio interviews.
Yeah.
Jeff is considering writing a couple of more books. He has a book deal with a German, big German mainstream publisher. So what will happen is that the focus now is really going to reach out beyond the inner circle of Chambra.
Well, and that was a question I had when I talked to Jeff personally, is it occurred to me one day that if Jeff and Linda stopped tomorrow, I was like, oh shit, what happens then? I mean, will we survive at all? And so Jeff assured me that he has calendared out for, what, 5 more years or something like that, that you, that's your hope to do.
I said I didn't have any plans of retiring right away.
Right. You said 5 years. I remember 5. I guess, so the big question
is this being recorded, Joe?
Yeah, exactly. Carrie, that was you and I talking on the phone. This is a recorded meeting. I have no exit strategy right now.
What about you, Linda? Are you going to write a book?
We'll see.
I mean, so the you're the big guy, and the show is all on your shoulders.
No.
Well, I mean, in a sense, if you don't keep channeling and producing more material, there's no new products. I guess I'm not trying to put it on you. I'm saying, is there any thought to go, like Jan put out a book. Mm-hmm. Online. Is there any thought to bringing in more personalities to do some more things to diversify? Not out of the realm of what we know. Not like being GM and buying a cookie company. Something stupid, but bringing in more inspiring...
GM should have bought that cookie company. <by now. laughs>
Probably a bitter investment.
Well, yeah, actually, it's always been a goal of Linda's and mine to create the material such that other people can go out and teach it, or people can keep buying it, no matter if Linda and I, you know, are here or not. We do intend to be here, but let's say we decided to just take a year off and go have fun.
Oh, yeah, right.
we have the Chambra Institute, and that's one of the things that, you know, we want to continue to build and to grow. There's a tremendous library. We've learned something interesting with Chambra Institute, that we have a lot of teachers around the world, and probably over 400 certifications in the different studies. But we found it's a big leap for non-Chambra to come and spend $600 and 3 days to take aspectology, because they don't know what it is, or they're not willing to make that commitment. So some really good teachers like Deb Fennessy and others are taking the asked bias materials now. They're being licensed by the company to use that, and they do a one-nighter, and they do a asked to bias about relationships or pets or some of the other ones.
It's an amazing initiative.
Yeah, and they're getting the interest out there, and they're having fun doing it, by the way. So that's we're finding different ways to...
They find different ways
to open it up. Things like Jan and Linda mentioned, I've been doing more of these radio interviews. I love doing them, and they're easy to do. I can do them sitting in, you know, at home, you know, drinking a cup of coffee. And I did two this week, and I have another one coming up pretty soon. And Gene Tinder is working on scheduling more of those. It's a great way to get materials out there. And then
it's efficient too.
Oh, it's real efficient. You know, Linda says, "Hey, it's time. Go upstairs." and then doing the book. I want to turn Journey of the Angels into a book. So August, I'm going to be sitting up in our trailer and working away up there where there's no phone or internet, and getting the book out. We have some really good connections now for publishing in Europe and in the U.S., and that's another way to open the market.
And if I may add to that, indeed, to give you a feel for how big that has become, the teachers now generate about $600,000 of revenue for this company, and it's growing.
Gross.
If you look at the store sales, things are being sold even if there are no new products. Of course, new products add to the library. Like any media company will tell you, to have a library is to have cash flow. So it would not be the same company as it is today, obviously, when they would decide to retire. But there is a structure created and there's a business created that will continue to go on. So it has become something that is viable by itself. Absolutely. Now, whether the board at that time could decide to say, okay, let's talk with some of the teachers to develop some more products, et cetera, absolutely, why not? Fact of the matter is that right now, of course, everybody is looking to Jeff and Linda. But if they would not be around and other people would come in to do certain events, why not? Why not?
Carrie, another thing is actually we do have an ongoing effort to bring other people in and do partnerships with them, like Johan with their CDs. Anders Holt, we've been really encouraging. He just got a shipment on his two new CDs yesterday. And Schomburg, who write books, or we do the launch pad right here. We're very active in encouraging people to do their own projects or to do kind of a partnership with Crimson Circle. And I love that part. It's one of my favorites. And when are you going to write your book? Okay, any other questions here from a couple of Steve?
This is not so much a question as a comment, and especially on what you said in your opening remarks. First of all, I'd like to thank you, Jeff, for making that call. And I'd like to thank you, Jan, for answering. without that, I'm pretty sure we wouldn't be sitting here now talking about it. So thank you both.
And Linda. She was actually the one that inspired it.
As usual, she was the one.
I'll never forget. It was done. Midnight in Finland, and the sun was still up because it was in June, I believe.
So thank you, Linda.
My pleasure.
But in line with your opening comments about getting the information out, sharing this information with a larger group of people, and I just, from my personal experiences, I have been amazed at the number of people that I've talked to that know the energy has changed. Mm-hmm. They just don't know what it is. They don't have a name for it, a term. They just feel it.
Right.
And I'm getting there's a tremendous number of people out there that just haven't connected with it yet. They know something's happened.
Yeah.
So I want to encourage, all of us to just have conversations.
Absolutely. And along with that, Steve, there's a book I've been wanting to write for years, and I am going to do it before the end of the year, not just the Journey.
Is this recorded, John?
Journey of the Angels. But the other one, a very simple book.
This goes into the mix.
The Awakening Symptoms.
Oh, yeah.
But the little thing on the website, the 12 symptoms, that's the most widely read, widely distributed, because you don't have to be Schomburg or metaphysical or anything. You read that and go, that's why my neck hurt. That's why I wake up at 2 in the morning. That's why. And a simple book with some good anecdotal stories and not a clinical book, but saying, here's what's happening. You're
here's
waking up.
What it feels like.
Yeah. So those are the two that I really want to get out there.
I remember an incident last summer when I went into Barnes & Noble looking for books and, you know, the New Age section, and it's like, I was just depressed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's just nothing about new energy on those shelves. So
yeah. Linda was just at the New Age, what's called INET, New Age, International New Age Trade Show in Denver a week or so ago. What was your experience like there? And this is for all the New Age bookstores.
It's pretty old.
Yes.
It's pretty old. Yeah. You know, there were people, they were loving, and they were, you know, everybody was looking for a way to heal you. Nobody was talking about how you can take care of yourself, and it was old. Mm. It was sweet, but it was old.
I know, and it's a drain.
Yeah.
Oh, she came back and she was depressed. Actually,
yeah. Really.
She's like, it was like going back 30 years, and yeah.
Things just hadn't changed.
It's been a huge opportunity because that's one of the fastest growing segments. Like to capitalize on the books and that. That opportunity, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, there's a huge listening out there for it.
Yeah.
Just need to open our mouths.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Carrie, I go back. I'm just going to make a comment here. You say, well, what new ideas?
John,
well, I got a lot of them. But one of the
David.
Things is I'm looking at these blog talk radio programs. They're so easy to do. And Crimson Circle needs a blog talk radio program of our own. I mean, they're Oh, sorry, John. John just passed out back there. But what a great way to reach out and not me necessarily. Maybe it's Linda. Maybe it's one of you to be the host of that show and bring on other speakers and other talkers who are in line with that. You know, with a new energy, and not just Chambra. But I get so excited about that. But then I have to. The board and the you know, yeah. Jan and Linda say, do what we do best.
You have to get your other stuff done first.
Yes, after the book.
After the book.
Yeah. But stuff like that, what a great way to reach out.
Okay.
Well, John could train somebody.
Okay. We have time. Linda, as Secretary of the Corporation, signaling me, saying our time is almost done. Let's take one or two more quick questions.
And I know Deb and I have a quick one. And actually, mine may be a little longer. And actually, I have a specific question. I know Annie sold her stock back in September, as a stockholder. And Annie Francoeur.
Annie Francoeur, yes.
And I'm curious, actually, to how much she sold that for and how that price was determined. But then going beyond
that. Let me answer that real quick. That was a private transaction between two parties. It has nothing to do formally with the Crimson Circle. So I can't answer that question. Okay. You'd have to ask offline. Right.
And actually, taking that and going forward, our last shareholder meeting, there were shareholders that actually, you know, wanted to sell their stock.
Yes.
I personally want to keep mine. There still may be shareholders that want to sell. I think before they sell, they need to really know that, frankly, the power and the benefit and the value of the shares have been dramatically increased because of the actions that you and Linda have taken. And, you know, primarily, the three of you, including Janice, giving up your founder shares. So in effect, all the shareholders received about a 150-to-1 stock split, which is huge. It's huge. In addition to that, then just having the preferred shares for voting rights to protect, you know, the property rights, not necessarily having a financial advantage, which is also huge. I mean, it's unprecedented. And never been done in corporate history. So actually, the shareholders' value has been beyond description increased in value, worth much more now than it ever was at an original issue. And in my opinion, anybody that would sell would be making a great financial mistake. However, with that said, some people may be in a position where they need to.
Right.
The recommendation, the thought I had would be to actually have some formal way, you know, of a buyer-seller for new people to come in. Mm-hmm. If people, in fact, have to sell, you know, they have a vehicle to sell. In my opinion, again, would be a mistake to sell, but at least if people need the money. And part of it is we want to keep people who are shareholders happy and that really want to be a part of the company. So my recommendation maybe is, and it's not a slam dunk, not an easy answer, but it would be a topic at least for future discussion mm-hmm. for the board of directors to see what vehicle for people that really want to sell, how to match buyers and sellers in the future. A thought I have also before people sell their stock is an example. Paying a stock dividend of 5% would cost the company roughly $30,000. Mm-hmm. Which is chump change. Right now in this financial market, there's not many places you can go and get a 5% return on your money. So even though $30,000 sounds like a lot of money right now because you know, we're in arrears, frankly, we can think out of the box. And in effect, that doesn't have to be an obstacle. So what I'm actually saying is, because things have not been a cash cow to this point, going forward does not mean it's going to be the case, especially right. with this infusion of consciousness that you know we're all co-creating as we go forward. So,
David, that's a good idea, and it's something that the board should discuss.
What are you referring to?
The idea of for shareholders who want to sell, the company can't get directly involved in the transaction, but we could perhaps facilitate a program. I know there's a few shareholders that would like to sell. The company's not in the position to buy back. And, of course, then we'd have to offer it to everyone, and we just don't have the cash to do it. That's why we're offering a 10% dividend in kind through the shareholder benefit program.
But to conclude on your point, David, yes, if there are shareholders that would be interested to take out other shareholders, mm-hmm. then that can be very easily accommodated. Perhaps you remember that less than a year ago, we had a number of outside investors that had expressed interest in becoming a shareholder in the company. And we tried to match that group of people with the shareholders that had indicated their interest to sell. As far as I'm aware, very few, if any, contacts really came together, and none of them really resulted in a deal except with Annie. And so I think you need to be realistic. On the one hand, you can look at this company as a unpolished jewel that will start to shine more and more. If you look at the financials right now and you would talk to our accountant and ask their merger and acquisitions expert what you should pay for the shares, it would be a different ballgame. So
right.
I think it is fair to say, okay, can the company accommodate shareholders that want to sell and want to buy and bring them together and let them discuss privately how they would try to enter into a transaction? But I think we should also be realistic about what people can expect. And that's, of course, up to the persons involved. But yeah, by all means, the board can discuss that as an opportunity. I think the big advantage would be that some of the shareholders that had certain expectations about this company, and those expectations in their view did not materialize and are disappointed about that, that energetically it would be a good thing if other shareholders that are committed to going forward and to support this company, that they exchange the shares.
And there are a lot of people that still want to invest.
I'm not aware because we didn't...
I don't think it was widely known, yeah. It was not widely put out.
Well...
I mean, it was talked about in our shareholder meeting, but it was not in any of our newsletters or was not talked about in the shout. So, you know, the majority of Chambra doesn't have a clue that that window of opportunity was there.
If I may add, David, you're right. At the same time, I think it's also fair to say that many of the people that approached me about this expected that a share would cost $5 or $10. And when I said, well, the original investors paid $10,000 for a share, they... we're not heard of again.
Yeah. Not $10 for a share. $10,000 for 1,000 shares.
Yeah, for 1,000. Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah, $10 for a share, but yeah. But the certificate that people bought for the shares involved an investment of $10,000.
David, I think you bring up a really good point, and we will see how far we can pursue that.
There's limitations on it. There are definitely limitations on it, and then you do have to balance the fact that while the company has value and it has a value in many different ways, that you also have to consider that when you look at the balance sheet at the end of the day, you also have, you have to be very clear about it. At the end of the day right now, the company, in terms of paper, does not have a lot of value right now.
If I may add to that,
correct.
There's also a formal restriction that have been put on by SEC regulations that we can only sell shares to a certain category of shareholders. So it's not for everybody that would be able to buy this stock.
We're limited on much we can talk about it.
Yeah, but it's a good point, David, and it's something we need to look at more carefully. It's not like we haven't been looking at it, but it's time again to take a look into that.
Deb had one final question.
Okay, final question from Deb.
Just a comment on this that I agree, and I think you said it in some form, but when we talked about the core values of the company, when you have a small group of shareholders, I think energetically there would be a lot of value in being able to figure out a way to let the people, to buy out the people that don't support that core energy.
Yeah, and you can kind of see in the votes the direction. You can kind of see the percentage that is just going to say no to anything, and that's why it surprised us even on the minutes of the last shareholders meeting. What's there to not say no on, or what's there to say no on? So you can tell there's a small group, and, energetically it would be nice to have them released or them release themselves, whatever you want to call it. It would be very, very nice.
Of course, they have to choose to be released as well.
That's correct. That's correct.
My question is, you've spoken about negotiating with Adamus, your new agreement, or an agreement. And so I wonder if you have anything additionally to share. I know you want to take some time off, but do you have anything additionally to share about how you want to see your role your program change as we move forward and not traveling so much and what that might look like?
I think realistically that Linda and I are still going to be traveling a lot for the next year. Combination of things, we're launching the Adamus Mystery Schools, so we want to get around to different parts of the world. And, quite frankly, financially, we account for about 50% of the total revenue
coming in, so
we can't just sit home and twitch our thumbs. We actually, and I'm speaking on behalf of both of us, we love going out and doing the workshops. It is the most beautiful thing. What's difficult is in the past when there was so much chaos back home, and chaos that over the last 2 years Jan has put into, so it's not chaos, but that was difficult getting emails and phone calls that basically things were falling apart. And now when we go out, we know things are, that we have the great staff right now. Things run very, very smoothly. So it's a lot easier to travel. But in answer to your question,
it's a little too intense. It I'd be happy if it notched down one level.
And even the staff like them to travel.
Yeah. And the staff gets a tremendous amount done for being a small group. But in answer to your question, we'll be going out bringing two primary things for the next 6 months anyway: the Adamus Mystery Schools, which we got a little bit of a taste of in Romania, I think it was, and then the interdimensional workshop, which, in Romania, was just phenomenal. So we're going to be out doing that, and as well as things like, this is really strange, but we put on something like the Midsummer Conference in Breckenridge, which is Tobias' departure. We projected about 550 attendees, and paid attendees, not including staff and guests, were under 350. We couldn't figure that one out at all.
Never imagined that.
However, when we put the South of France trip on the website, and it was about $4,000. It sold out in 24 hours. So it says to us that people want the smaller, more intimate, up close
personal.
And personal. And the big events, you know, these gigantic, you know, 500,000 people events, they're not interested in anymore. They don't want to hear a bunch of speakers get up there and promote their own wares. And they want the intimacy of, like, the upcoming, I'm going to plug now, the upcoming Egypt 2010, a five-star experience.
On a riverboat where it's just Chambra and just a group that we could interact with.
Sitting in the Great Chamber, the King's Chamber, the Great Pyramid, just our group, hearing Adamus come in and talk. Sign up now, the price goes up in September. But that's what people are interested in.
I'm wondering for your U.S. tours if you might look at some little retreats in Colorado.
Do you know what? They actually they don't sell that well. We will definitely be doing more work, and it's easier in Colorado because we can control our expenses, but actually we don't do that much in Colorado because the events are not that successful.
So I'm thinking something smaller like you're doing in Wisconsin or Lincoln City, like Gold Lake Retreat. Like actually just small retreats. It's as easy for people to fly from the States into Denver as it is into Green Bay.
Right. Especially. You know, actually, Linda brings up a good point. The group here, the local group, is used to coming up here once a month and, you know, for a couple of dollars. And they're not that supportive. We were trying to promote this event for...
School 1 and 2, even.
For Yoham, for Amir Gerhardt and Anat. Tomorrow night, trance dance, you know, this group from Israel. We have so few signups, it's embarrassing. The locals don't come out. However, when we do something in Lincoln City or Taos or Santa Fe or Wisconsin, it sells out.
Well, but not like, well, it's still, the States is just, I don't know what it is. There's a complacency, I think. And even School 1 and 2, that was a fabulous event. It was only $400, or if you were going to the Midsummer, you could come for $200. And what do we have, 40 paid people?
No, we have more than that.
No.
Well.
But here's the difference. You know, you've been doing it in Breckenridge where you're used to getting 150 people, and my suggestion is that you're not necessarily trying to attract Colorado people, but Colorado is as much a destination, retreat destination, as
right.
Lincoln City or Green Bay, and to do a smaller one where you're only expecting 40 or 50 people, do something at like Gold Lake Retreat where people are really in kind of a getaway retreat setting, any kind of a retreat setting that you guys would choose, but something that has more of the small person feel, and then you're going to pull people in from
all over
the other areas.
Yes. We're always open to trying that. I have no problem trying anything that meshes that is what people want. I mean, no problem with
but
that.
But there's another phenomenon that we're looking at and wondering about. It doesn't matter whether it's Colorado or Wisconsin, but when we do events in Europe or Asia or South America, it tends to sell out right away. When we do stuff here in the U.S., it's slow. Now, it's not just us. It's Lee Carroll,
right.
Same thing. He's focusing on Russia right now. Sellout crowds where he has to rent a sports stadium. Steve Rother, pretty much the same. If you look at his schedule, he's in Holland, Latvia, Norway. There are some very strange awakening spots in the world right now. We're hits in Korea. Tough place to go. I mean, to travel all the way there, but those are the places that are awakening, and that's where we're tending to put our attention. I wished we could do more stuff right here and have people fly in for it, but experience shows that it's United States is I don't know. It's not going through awakening like the rest of the parts of the world.
You saw the teacher training. We did a teacher training in Colorado, and 2/3 of the people were from Europe. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't you have to factor in global financial crisis and everything?
No, it doesn't
really
seem to have much to do with it, Carrie.
In terms of looking at what's happening right now, it's all changing and going to change as you go forward anyway.
I think there's actually some energetic awakening points. And who would have thought, for instance, that we'd be like rock stars kind of in Romania? And we go there and we sell out the events and there's hundreds of people. And it's not because we do any different kind of marketing, although we do have an incredible sponsor there, but there's this passion there. There's a passion in Korea and other places in the world. I think they're going through the awakening. I think actually America thinks it went through its awakening 30 years ago.
It's true.
But, they're about to discover that they're kind of running a little behind.
We're going to have to get used to that. We're going to have to travel. We're just going to have to get over it because we've had it good for 10 years.
Yeah.
We might have to fly to Romania.
We're going to start to do some of the monthly webcasts from the road. Linda pointed out to me how ridiculous it was to have to run home all the time to do a webcast, to turn right around, to go back out. And so we're actually seriously contemplating like a November, October or November from Europe, and to do some, not all of them, but some
of them. That's where the action is.
Yeah, that's where the awakening is.
In January and February would be a good time to be in the summer fun.
Maybe one in, let's say, Kauai.
No, but it's interesting to observe, Kerry, that with the Midsummer Conference in Hamburg, the first one in Europe, when you look at the Midsummer Conferences here, I think about one-third of the people come from outside the United States,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I think you could count the people from the States that went to Hamburg on one hand.
Yeah.
And, it's just, yeah, perhaps people should get used to, like the Europeans do, travel all the way to the States to say, this workshop is only available in Munich or mm-hmm. in Bucharest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've had it good, and I know it.
But also, I think that, and this is my last comment because we want to close the meeting, there are also new technology available that makes it very easy to broadcast. One of the things that I've been suggesting to Jeff and Linda is to cooperate with local teachers, organize a one-day or a two-day event where they do a channeling or an introduction online, and then the teacher would carry the remainder of the event. Actually, if I remember correctly, you will do something like that for Hungary,
mm-hmm.
Where a special channel will be recorded for Hungary, and it will be a local event. So there are very exciting ways to expand. Thank you.
Linda, any closing statements?
No, it's been good, and it's good to see things coming to a stabilizing point so that we can move forward.
Yep. It's going to be exciting with this change right now with Tobias leaving, Adamus coming in. I think he's going to have a little bit different program. We're still planning to do workshops and things, but I think Adamus is going to have a different way of doing it. So I'm excited about it, maybe a little nervous about it.
You should be.
Sad to see Jan going, but completely understanding why.
I can cry.
And I know he's still a shareholder, and I can still call him on the phone, but it's been... you've endured a lot over the last couple of years, to put it.
It was fun.
Yeah. We'll keep the reports coming out to the shareholders, and please, if you have any questions, make sure to ask. Always happy to answer them, even the tough questions. They're fine. You have every right to ask them. So thanks for participating today, and look forward to seeing you all. We'll get back to you very soon about the shareholder benefit program.
The details.
The details of that. And hope to see you all either here or on the road. And don't forget, Egypt 2010, the 14-day five-star tour. Actually, I joke about it, but Linda and I and Jan all went last year. We didn't know what to expect. We learned a lot. It was a great trip, but we learned a lot about, what it's like to be on that boat, and especially if it's all Chambra, what it's like to, all the different nuances. So this year, we really know how to do it.
We're really excited.
We're excited. So if you get a chance, do try to come to that. Yeah. So with that, thank you, everybody, for participating in this. And we'll see you around. Officially adjourn the meeting at, let's call it 12:52.
Okay.
12:52. Let's take a deep breath to adjourn. And release. Thanks.
Thank you.